Hello and welcome to another episode of GT Radio Conversations with moi, Gino Magnetta. And I'm so excited. The series of Wonder Woman in gaming, we've had so many great women on the show talking about so many important issues. And so tonight we're still continuing the series on Wonder Woman of gaming. And we definitely have a wonderful woman of gaming on our show today, Kim Van Amberg from CEO of Casino Del Sol. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you so much. I'm flattered to hear you say those nice things.
Yeah, well, very well deserving. So I'm going to jump right into it here because I think that our listeners are you know, wanting to hear stuff like this, and it's been on the brain for almost every show. How does a woman become CEO of a company? I mean, it's happening more often, but we know it's not happening enough. So tell us how that happened, and then let us know what you think should evolve for things to keep happening that way.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna veer off topic for a minute, and
sure.
And it partially answers your question, but I was a lawyer before I came to work in the casino business, and I remember thinking as a young lawyer in a law firm that wow, there are so many men here, and I don't see very many women. So I remember just thinking, wow, this is really a male dominated business.
Quite a few years ago, too, right? When it was even more male-dominated, right?
Yeah, so I guess I graduated from law school in 1999, so yeah, 2000.
Uh-huh.
But so I thought that about the legal profession, and when I came to work at Casino Del Sol in 2007, it was more male-dominated. And I was kind of surprised by that. And I guess it's just how the businesses have evolved, but I don't know how a woman becomes a CEO of a company. I mean, I think it's just the numbers, and it's more common now. And when you look around at a director's meeting or a manager's meeting in any business, you see just a lot more women in the room than you did 10, 15, 20 years ago. So people expect for women to be in leadership. And so to that extent, it's easier. But obviously, if you look at the numbers, it's still fairly unusual. But I think it's the same thing that cause a man to become CEO. You work hard and you are, helpful to the bottom line, and you do a great job, and you help the organization, and good things happen.
Yeah, and it seems like most of the time when you go into different organizations, even though, you know, it's opening up, it seems like there's a perception on the people that are running the organization that, you know, maybe the women should get more of a shot now, as opposed to 20 years ago when it was even more male dominated. And we're seeing this in politics too, not just in, you know, the private sectors. You're seeing a lot more women getting elected to office, you know. When you first started practicing law and you know, went into this law firm 17 years ago or whenever it was, 18 years ago, and you saw so many men and what were your feelings? How did you cope with that going into that environment?
Well, I guess I was surprised on the one hand, because even that many years ago, I think my graduating class at the University of Arizona Law School was the first class where there was more than 50% females in the class. So I guess I had in my mind that the law firm would look something like that, and it didn't. And the farther up in leadership you got, the fewer women there were. You know, so as far as the partners went, you know, there were however many partners and one or two women out of that fairly large number. So I was kind of surprised, but it was a great experience, and I loved practicing law, and I loved the people I worked with, and it worked out great. But I imagine, kind of like the casino business, I imagine that if I went back and looked at that firm now, You'd have a lot more women in partnership positions and a lot more women in general, because it's just, like you said, it's people now expect it. People are comfortable with it. You know, even the maybe the people who've been around a long, long time, it's no longer the exception to see women in positions of leadership. And so to that extent, it is easier. And I hope, you know, for those people coming out of college right now and deciding on a career, or graduating from graduate school and deciding on a career, you know, I hope that's the case, that I'm right, that it is, and your comment too, that it is, you know, just becoming, it's not so surprising anymore. You know, people expect it, and I hope that that makes that possibility of being in a leadership role a little more accessible.
Going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so.
Kim, what are the key elements to for someone to become a leader? What are those elements, and how have you achieved that? Because, I mean, CEO is the highest, you know, is basically overlooking everything. So what are the key elements to that? What are the ingredients?
Well, I think with a lot of things, and I consider this one of them, there are a lot of people do it a lot of different ways, and a lot of people have leadership qualities that, you know, we don't all share, but that doesn't mean I can't be a great leader. You might do it one way, I do it another. I say that because I think it's, there are a lot of different ways to skin a cat, and there's no one right way. There certainly probably are some things in common that great leaders have. But, you know, I think obviously hard work, enthusiasm, a willingness and an interest in engaging people and being there with them, not just physically, but, and I'm talking about managers and directors in line level, but just talking to people and being there for them, and great communication and enthusiasm. You know, you're sometimes leading people, well, none of us like change, right? You're sometimes leading people in a direction, maybe they'd rather go a little bit different direction. And so just, you know, that, you know, take the time to talk about it and sell it and remind people that we're all here trying to do the same thing, which is make this the best place it can be so that we can distribute more money to the Pascua-Yaqui tribe. And ultimately, I think those factors together get the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the key element being hard work, and it takes a lot of work, doesn't it? I mean, there's a lot of
it does.
Balls that you're juggling.
It does. I'll tell you a funny story. The part of my journey to the casino, I worked at a law firm in Tucson, and I had decided, because my husband and I had had our first son, that I probably wanted to go work in a different environment so that I wouldn't be working so many hours. And so probably the first couple of years that I worked here, that was a successful strategy. But since that time, I've seemed to go in the opposite direction. but I think it was a great move, and I've enjoyed the casino very much. But my plan of cutting my hours back did not work out.
No. Kim, give us an, that's an interesting point you bring up, because give us an idea. I know that, you know, I know where you're coming from. I've worked with those, you know, 18 hours or sometimes, you know, sleepless nights or whatever. Give us an idea. When you say hard work, what are you talking about? I mean, how hard?
Well, I think what it's two things. I mean, it's work here at work, but it's also, and you know that, I mean, in a given week, you know, you might have four or five evening events, a player event, a concert or player development event, and a, you know, dinner interview, and you started your day at 8 because you had, you know, meetings with this or that. So the work days, actual work, are long and can make a week pretty hectic. But I think what you don't see just kind of looking at it from the outside is that the workday is 24 hours a day. You know, the phone is likely to ring at 6:30 when you're making breakfast.
Yep.
And if you leave your phone by the bed at night when you go when you go to sleep, you know, you may be getting texts at 2 a.m. And so it doesn't, you know, there's this blur between the personal time and the work time, because there's not really, you're just on 100% of the time. And you have to take that call because you don't know, you know, did the power go out? At, you know, was there a fire? I don't, you know, you don't want to miss that call. So that's, makes the schedule a little bit.
If they're calling you that late, that means there's something going on that you need to be spoken about.
Right. Absolutely. So.
Yeah.
But it's certainly, I mean, we were chatting a few minutes ago before the show started, and you mentioned the excitement of the business, and it certainly is. I mean, I don't think I could ever go back and work for a law firm.
No. Imagine how boring that would be.
It would be. It really would be. And then
seriously?
The people are interesting. The environment is interesting, and people are having fun. And I just don't think there's anything better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's exactly the way I feel. What were your aspirations growing up? And just describe a little bit about your upbringing. You know, where you were born and what that upbringing was like.
Oh, I grew up in a suburb of Dallas, Texas. I remember from a fairly young, middle-class environment, I remember from a very young age thinking that I might want to be a lawyer, and I don't know why. But I also remember very clearly, I don't think my mom's listening, but I remember thinking that I wanted to make sure that I got an education so that I could earn a living without being dependent on anyone else. And I was watching her as I was having these thoughts. So I just remember being very interested from early on in what I needed to do to take care of myself to make sure that I could earn a living. That was based on just kind of observations of how my mom was in her relationship with her husband. So, you know, fast forward that to, you know, college and law school. And I, you know, it also just so happened that I loved law school. I just thought it was fantastic. And the practice of law itself was fantastic.
You had a passion for
but
it.
I feel, well, I just think it's a really challenging intellectual process. But I've also, I feel like I've had the real luck of having, this is my third career. I worked in the hospitality business for Sheraton Hotels and Lowe's Hotels for a few years before I went to law school. And that was a really interesting business, and the practice of law was really interesting. And this is even more interesting. So I feel blessed to have kind of had a chance to do a few different things, and more blessed to be, you know, in the position that I'm in now in this fantastic business.
Yeah, it's really never a dull moment.
No.
Kim, how should women go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
How should women support each other, and what does the new generation need to know about that?
Well, I hope, you know, based on the stuff that we were talking about a few minutes ago, I hope that it is true that women entering the workforce today have fewer barriers and there's more acceptance, and I think that's true. I have a friend whose daughter's just graduated from college. I should ask her that question in a few months and see if they're finding that, you know, to be true. But I do think that now, and maybe not 15 years ago, in whatever business you're in, there are powerful men and women who can help mentor you. And I encourage both men and women to mentor these young women as they enter the workforce, because they need it. And the women, you're going to be a great mentor, and you know what it takes to be a great mentor, and you also know what these women might be facing. And so you have a particular knowledge, possibly, of what you know, things that you might say or do to help them, or, you know, just lend an ear. And to the men, I would say, you know, it takes both. I've talked to some people, and I've seen in some work environments that the companies seem to think that the women should mentor the women and the men should mentor the men. And I think it should be both, right? I think that if you set up a system where your primary, just say you're a woman entering the workforce, your primary points of contact within the organization are women, well, what if the people in the organization or even the person at the top of the organization is a man, right? Don't you want to have access to more people within the organization and learn from more people within the organization? So my hope is that people, women in particular, can get that mentorship from both men and women, but that women take an active role in trying to develop those relationships and help where they can. Because my sense is that even though things have come an incredibly long way, that there's still, you know, challenges and issues that it might be helpful to have that mentorship relationship and might make it easier for them to get through.
Yeah, it's important. It's interesting what you said, both men and women, right? So it's like,
yeah,
you know, like you said, you can get the knowledge from both. You don't have to necessarily, it can be woman to woman. It can also be man to man. And that's
absolutely,
that's the true mentorship. Yeah. Yeah, kind of take away the barriers.
Absolutely. And I think that will further take away the barriers.
Yeah.
I remember in a couple of the law firms that I've worked for, they did pair you up with a woman as your mentor, and that's great. I thought that was fantastic and learned a lot and from some very, very talented women. But the people, the leadership of the law firm were men. So
yeah,
I didn't have the same access to that mentorship that some of the guys did. And I just think that mentorship from anyone with experience in the organization is going to be helpful to you, but it's also about what's going to help me move ahead. And that involves access to people at the higher levels in the organization, whether they're women or men.
Correct. It doesn't matter where it comes from. It's all valuable information.
Right.
How do you see the casino business today, and what do you see as the pros and cons?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, when we talk about – I'll talk about Indian gaming mostly. I mean, one of the pros is one of the things that we've just talked about, which is that it's fun and interesting and it's never a dull moment. But one of the things that I think is so rewarding regarding Indian gaming is you're not just able to, you know, come to work and – have exciting things going on around you and interesting people and wonderful entertainment and people here having a good time, but you're also, the proceeds of that work are going to benefit the tribe. So it's, you know, it's a feeling that you don't get working for most for-profit organizations, you know.
Yeah.
Yet if you're working for a publicly traded company, you go home and you feel like you did something great for your shareholders that day, and you probably did.
Yeah.
but
yeah. You don't know any
tribe,
of them, but you did, right?
You don't know anything any of them, but you're happy that their stock prices are whatever they went to.
Yeah.
But you are able not only to recognize that, you know, what you did helped, you know, fund, you know, dialysis and housing and scholarships, you know, and on and on and on. But you also get to, you know, see it in action. And it just,
right,
it adds a level of meaning that you just don't get, you know, maybe you do in some other business. I don't know what it would be. And the opportunity to provide employment where you see with your own eyes how, you know, needed it is and what it what it can provide for families in terms of just, you know, not just income, but, you know, future careers and development for the family.
Yeah, it's so, the evolution of Native nations and where they've come from in 25 years, where they started to where they are now is just an incredible story.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did.
And the
our
the conditions they were living in, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago was just like terrible.
There's a newspaper clipping I've seen from the Tucson newspaper from, you know, I want to say 1950, maybe 1948, and the original community out here is on a, it's at a location right off the freeway that right now, these many years later, is really close to the center of Tucson. But in, you know, at that late date, tribal members were living in this community with, you know, dirt floors and, you know, and
no hygiene, no running water.
And hot in the summer. And you just look, I mean, you just look from that perspective from then to now, and it's really astounding the amount of and the scope of the progress that took place over that, you know, relatively short period of time. But our organizational department did an onboarding video that was completed recently that kind of illustrates that in a different way. And it was just finalized and we saw it the other day. So it takes several different tribal member managers, directors who've been here quite a few years. And they're talking on camera about, you know, this is when I started. I started in, you know, 2001, and I started as a cage cashier. And, you know, a couple years later, I moved into the supervisor spot. Well, I moved into food and beverage, and then I was a manager. And now I'm, you know, I manage this, you know. One of the chefs talked about, you know, his journey and how he's, you know, a sous chef now, and he's bought a home, and he never imagined that he would be in a position to buy a home. So it's, you know, seven or eight tribal members going through their stories, and you just see on an individual basis how the opportunities that they've had have changed their lives, and it's really nice to watch.
Oh yeah, it's an incredible feeling when you can just see it in front of you, the fruits of your labor and how you can give back to the community. It's one of the great things about native gaming. You know, it's a lot of gratitude there. So
absolutely,
it's really good. Yeah, Kim, let's talk a little bit about your first job in gaming. You know, and how you progressed from there. But what was that like? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I told you how my plan was to have a more manageable schedule, and it didn't ultimately work out that way. But I came to work at the Pascua Yaqui Tribe in 2007 as the Assistant Attorney General for Gaming. So it was a legal role. But I was here, my office was here at the casino, and I had never worked in a casino. And so it was just a really, you know, just a new world to me, and not just the casino business being interesting, but it was an area of the law that I was new to me as well. Indian gaming law, the, you know, tribal state compacts, all the regulation that goes into that, the NIGC, you know, just all of these things that were, you know, discussions of sovereign immunity. These were all things that I just had little or no exposure to prior to that, and really just had a great experience with that. We were fortunate. Well, I don't know that fortunate is the right way to describe it. Fortunate from a legal perspective to get the legal experience, but we had a legal dispute with the Department of Gaming a couple years after I started that was also really interesting to participate in. So, at that point, I thought that was great. I had great experience here. And then over the years, I got, you know, one or two operational departments were reporting to me, and I just kind of got a little bit more experience here and there, and other departments were added to my plate. And I can't tell you other than that how it ended up that I was the CEO. But at the time it happened, it almost seemed natural because the progression over the several years had been that I had just taken on more and more responsibility with each year that passed.
Right. Yeah, you sort of earned it, right?
I don't know. I must have. I think I did.
Of course. Yeah, like you said, you over the years, you just gained and gained more responsibility. So it's kind of like, you know, the classic saying, you work your way up the ladder, right? And you know, one of the key things that you said, and you know, I go back to that because, you know, I'm a son of an immigrant from Italy. And pops used to always say, you know, work your ass off. It's hard work. But, you know, once you get there, you know, you'll see it'll pay off. But it's the people that want to put in the extra work and are patient. You know, it's like you said, you may be cooking breakfast and you're going to get a call. And you may get a call at 2 in the morning.
Absolutely.
So that's really what it takes. What would you say to, what advice would you give to anyone who wanted to get into gaming? What's the path, and how does someone want to get in it?
Well, and I get calls from students. The University of Arizona is here in Tucson, and so I get calls from students asking to participate in mentorship programs, and the law school here comes up and does a tour of the facility. There's an Indian gaming class that does, and so I end up talking to, you know, 20 law students every year, too, and those questions come up, and I would say, lawyer or non-lawyer, get into the business. There are opportunities. It is interesting. You have the chance to, you know, move around the country, you know, with different positions at different properties. And, you know, I defy you to find a more interesting or rewarding business to go into. And I also think it's interesting talking to young people who, you know, don't really, they just, oh, casino, I'm not, you know, what is that? Well, it is. It's the table games dealer, and it's, you know, the slot attendant, and it's all those things that you picture. But it's also, you know, restaurant manager and spa manager and masseuse and, you know, all these other positions that you aren't necessarily thinking when the word casino comes to mind. So we talk to students in the Tucson area, too, at, you know, high schools and middle schools, and talk to them about that. You know, you might think the casino is just gaming, but there are other positions here that you might be interested in. But for those people who are really interested in casinos and the gaming aspect of it, or the other aspects of it, I would say do it. It's fantastic, and chances are you'll absolutely love it.
And there you have it. You heard everybody out there. Do it. Chances are you'll love it, and I'll second that. What's there not to love? I mean, come on.
What is there
fabulous.
Not to love? I know, huh?
Yeah. It's great. You know, it's funny because I keep telling people that our business is the only business where people, you know, really, really have a just let loose. It, whatever is going on in your life, you can go to the casino. There's so many things there, like you said, the massage, the spa, the pool, the gaming, and the sports. It's just an entertainment center. You can just let loose, and people need that. You know, people need that.
They absolutely do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right, this has been fantastic.
Go ahead.
Oh well, I was telling somebody the other day. It's. I don't think of it as glamorous. I think of it as super fun, but other people view it as glamorous. I was talking to somebody and they wanted to know what I was doing on whatever date, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't make that event, I have to be at work for Pitbull. And and you could tell, what, you do what? Yep, I do. And it's going to be a great night, it's going to be fun. So
but
I think
they don't know
some of the
issues that you have to navigate, especially with entertainment.
No, I think not. But from a distance, it sounds really fun, and really, it sounds,
yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, it's good. It's all good. Let's. This has been fantastic. Let's grab a couple of questions here, okay? Oh,
right.
Too. We got a lot of callers. A lot of callers.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Let's see if this works. Because now I just see a... Oh, here we go. Hello, this is GT Radio, Tino Magnetta. I have Kim Van Enberg here on the phone. Do you have a question for her?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear
Hello.
Us?
Hello.
Hi, Kim. Hi, this is Caitlin. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you. My first question to you is, what is your biggest challenge as a female executive in the casino industry in today's environment? Or do you have any challenges?
Well,
do you face any challenges?
Well, there are remnants of a very old-fashioned view of the world. And I don't know where you are, but I think probably in most environments you'll run across, you know, there's a guy of a certain age who came up through his career and didn't have a female boss. And this is the vast minority of people, by the way. You know, this is not a common thing at all. But you do run across sometimes, you know, you'll be having a conversation and you say inside your head, was that too direct? Should I? And you realize that you're talking to somebody who is, that's not a part of how they, you know, grew up experiencing the workplace. And I guess I would say usually it's someone who either reports to you or who is trying to do business with you. And so they'll have to get over that, right? It's not causing me a problem because it's either my employee or someone who's trying to be an employee or be a vendor or that kind of thing. But it is interesting when it occurs, kind of startling to, you know, recognize that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an impediment. It's just kind of an observation that's a little weird. But I've not found, you know, for me, the novelty for people was, I think for some people it was that I was a woman. It was, oh, goodness. I find more curiosity, I guess I'll go with curiosity, that I didn't have a background in the casino business before working here. And I guess I would say to that, I think more and more you see people in this role who have either a non-casino background or a finance background or a food and beverage background or a marketing background, and that's just the world we live in. And that's okay. They can be as successful as the traditional, you know, I came up through table games person. So.
Right.
I don't
it
know if that answers your question.
Top.
No, it does. Thank
yeah,
you.
It does.
Great.
My next question.
Do you have another question? Yeah,
I do, if that's okay. What does your casino have planned or is currently doing to engage the interests of the millennial generation?
Well, my goodness, we certainly spend a lot of time talking about it. And, you know, we are experiencing the same millennial, you know, kind of we're embracing them. They're wanting that. We're wanting them to embrace us. Everyone is kind of going through this all at the same time. And what we're, you know, we have a lot of the population of the Pascua Yaqui tribe is very young. You know, young working age, a lot of people. And this casino has a very high percentage of tribal member employees. So it's millennials, but it's mostly tribal member millennials. And what we have tried to do, I talked about that onboarding video a few minutes ago, and that's one aspect of it, is talking to people when they start or before they start about why this is important and what this means. So it's not just that onboarding video that we hope lets people know, hey, I may be starting as a porter, and I don't really like cleaning toilets, but I can see I've got all kinds of options here. I might just have to do this for a year and then go do something else.
Yeah.
But it's also talking to them about, you know, look at all these different tribal services that, you know, that this money funds. This is important to you and to your tribe. And then it's also trying to, you know, we've looked at, and we haven't done it, but we've looked at, you know, altering our dress code to be a little bit more flexible, you know, in terms of makeup and hair and different things. You know, are these handbook provisions really 2018, right? Given A, the business that we're in, and B, that we have so many young people who are employees. So we're addressing it on a bunch of different fronts. We haven't found that one golden bullet that, oh, look, I've found the answer and all the millennials are going to, you know, work here and be happy without, you know, leaving for years and years. And if someone finds that golden bullet, I want them to call me. But
you heard that if you're listening out there.
Yeah.
You got the golden
bullet.
Yeah,
please.
Caitlin, did you have any more questions? You got a lot of great questions. Is there anything else you wanted to ask?
I do. Just one more thing. Can you describe a particularly challenging situation that you've experienced in your role as a CEO, and how did you overcome it?
I don't have a particular situation. I have a you know, I think in this role, the challenge, the biggest challenge is you have three or four different things going on all at the same time that are equally important for different reasons. You have the running of the business, and you have several constituencies that you interact with and that you have to have a good working relationship with. So you have your directors and executives, you have your line level team members, you have your tribal council. And so it's the marrying of all of those all going in the same direction that is, I won't say it's difficult, but that paints it wrong, but it's, you know, they're not all moving in the same direction.
Challenging.
You know? So it's
challenging.
Yeah. So it's kind of balancing that so that you all have a good relationship, but you're still moving that ball in the direction of what's best for the business. And I can't think of a specific example of that, but that's the constant theme.
Yeah, that's the big picture. That's good.
No, that's good.
Great, Caitlin, great questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin.
You have a good night. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's the big picture, right? Just keeping the boat, like the captain of the boat, trying to keep it on track, right? So it gets his destination.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
great.
Absolutely.
Hang on, we got someone else here. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kim Van Amberg on the line here. Do you have a question?
Good evening, Tino and Kim. How are you? Steve Neely here.
Hey,
you
how
didn't
are you, buddy?
Even have to say your name, Steve.
Well, I didn't know if Tino would recognize me or not.
Would you be caller one or caller three? I didn't know. But
well,
I knew you
all,
would be a caller.
I do have a question, a couple questions for you. You know, the first one, of course, being, you know, how in the world are you on
do
this?
Do I miss you?
Well, that goes without saying. Come on.
Well, we know that you do. Come on.
Let's get that out of the way. Do I miss you? Yes, I miss you. Okay, what's your next question?
I'm just curious how you committed yourself to this radio show on the NBA draft night, knowing that DeAndre Ayton was probably going to go number one.
You know what, Steve? I got two texts about a half an hour ago about that, and I cursed Gino like you have never seen.
But
that's my
bad
planning.
Actually, I think I committed you to it on this day without knowing it.
You did. You probably did.
Yeah,
okay.
You did. He's the culprit.
Well, I couldn't let an opportunity like this go by without calling in. And for those that are listening to be able to, you know, reinforce what people are hearing from Kim is the real deal. Kim is an amazing CEO. And when she talks, and I think is just an incredible example, especially for young women looking for someone to be inspired by and to interact with and network with. And I you know, and for those of you that don't know, Kim and I have worked together for several years. I owe a lot of the success I've had in the business and to Kim, to her support, and to her guidance.
You know, people being nice to me makes me uncomfortable, Steve.
I know it does. So I keep doing it.
Yeah.
But you also know that, and I can say when it comes to someone being direct, it was always a competition between her and I as to who would be the more direct one.
I win.
Yeah.
No, I didn't always win.
But you know, and I'm proud to you know call Kim not only a you know a former boss but a friend and someone that I have just a great deal of respect for. And when she talks about someone that has one of the big jobs of being in that corner office is balancing between all of these competing entities that are vying for not only her time but her approval, as well as even just the competition between maybe a CFO and a COO or a CMO and you know a couple of pretty strong personality A types who weren't real good at compromising and you know, one of the things that I absolutely learned from Kim was the importance of letting things work through the course, but when the decision was ready to be made, make it, explain why you made it that way, and stick to it.
Yeah.
But also be open to review after the fact, you know, not being scared to make a bad decision. But also when the decision was over, if it's good, you move on. But if you see that you could make an adjustment to what you made, then be willing to make that as well. And we had a lot of success working together. You know, obviously, I'd like to say I got my way more than I didn't. But I didn't always get my way.
Probably true. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that was something that I've had a lot of great bosses over the years. But, you know, it's certainly an area where a lot of people could learn from Kim and feel good about the advice that she's going to give you in that area, as well as a bunch of other places. But that specifically for me was something that was absolutely just not something I was particularly good at going in. I'm probably not any better at it now, but at least I have seen how to do that well. And that's a great credit to her. But,
Steve, too kind.
and I miss you too, by the way, but, in the spirit of the show and just the you know the conversation, you know you've been very successful in your different roles at Casino del Sol, and I've watched you through most of it. But in your opinion, if you had to go just point to one thing, and I know you can't point to just one, but what's the first thing you think of when someone says, you know what, you've done a lot here, what are you most proud of?
I want to tell you too.
okay,
and I'm going to. I'm going to tell you too. I'm just gonna make that decision. Well, the one at the beginning was there were some problems in some different areas that were expensive problems, and I am proud of the swiftness and the effectiveness of the turnaround, and certainly the team did it. I didn't do it, but it was I take pride in that, and I'm very proud of that. And the other thing is, and you and I have had this discussion, Steve, I feel like there's an environment here where team members understand that if they need the ear of the CEO, that they can get that, and I feel really great about that. And you know, sometimes, very rarely, most of the times, people, you know, they're respectful of your time. They're not just going to come up and talk every other week about what's going on. But it really makes me happy to know that they know that it's available and don't be afraid of coming up here to talk to me about something. and I'm gonna try and help you if I can. And those are my two.
Well, there's a whole
That's
long
great.
List, so I would agree. Both you are awesome at both of those, and I'm one of the ones that really benefited from your decisive and quick decision making, and I'll be forever grateful.
Well, you're very kind,
no,
Steve. I appreciate
That's
it,
great.
And I
All right,
enjoyed
you guys
working
have a
with
great
you
night.
Very much. Okay,
Same
take
here.
Care.
Yeah, bye. Thank you, buddy. Talk soon. Yeah. Well, that's great. It also goes woman to men, right, in terms of mentorship. So it's just like you were saying, doesn't matter where
Absolutely.
It comes from.
Well,
yeah.
And Steve and I mean, we worked very well together, and I learned, you know, I think that's the beauty of it, too. I learned a lot from Steve, and it was just a pleasure having the chance to work with him. And
yeah, he's
for
a great person.
For the time that I did. I know, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got here. Some good stuff going on tonight here. It's good vibes. Hang on a sec. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kim Van Amberg on the line. Do you have a question for her? Hello? Can you hear us? No, I guess they can't. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to that one. Yeah.
Yep.
Technical difficulties. Okay, let's try the next one here. All right. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kim Van Amberg on the line. Do you have a question for her?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Tina. It's Kim. It's Heidi and Tizana. How are you today?
Hey, how are you? Good, good, good. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Heidi, how are you?
Well, how are you, Kim?
Great.
It's been wonderful listening to you. And the first thing that came to mind is who has been your greatest mentor? And you're only allowed to say one person for now within the tribal casino industry. If you had to pick one major mentor, who was it?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the best lesson learned?
What did you ask in the casino or in my career overall?
No, only in the tribal casino industry.
Okay. I'll tell you that the person who hired me was Wendell Long, and I learned a lot from him. He was a very It's also, I think it's interesting because a lot of times you learn the most from people who have personalities that are unlike yours, right? Wendell's a very big personality. He fills the room, and you know, I'm not that person. But I thought that his energy and excitement was a really, really great asset, and I took a lot from that.
Awesome. And if you had to attribute your success to one thing, what would you say it has been, Kimberly?
I'm very ambitious and very I'm very ambitious and hardworking. I want to do well. But I don't Yeah, I guess that's it. It's hard to talk about yourself. My gosh.
Well, I think what you're getting at is you're very driven. Like you like to do well, but you don't necessarily need the spotlight. You just want to do your thing.
Yeah.
And you want the people around you to respect you, and you want to respect them. But you're different that way. You don't need the spotlight.
Yeah, I don't. I'm okay with it, but.
And what I've experienced with you, Kimberly, is you're very personable and there's no ego attachment, which is a wonderful asset to have.
I try. It's hard with all these egos that you're surrounded with sometimes, I'll tell you what. But I wasn't talking about Steve Neely. Not at all.
Awesome. Thank you very much, and thank you for all the great insights this evening. Thanks.
Thank you so much, and you sent me a book a couple of weeks ago, and I need to call you.
No problem, Kim. We'll touch base. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Heidi.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, great. some great questions and some great people. All right, let's move right along here. Hello, this is GT Radio. I have Kim Van Amberg on the line. Do you have a question for her?
Yes, Kim, it's Evan. How are you?
I'm good. Did you say Edmund?
Evan.
Evan, great. I'm great. How are you doing?
Great tonight. My question for you is, what are your thoughts on the importance of diversification in the way of the, you know, revenue streams for these Indian gaming casinos? What is Casino Del Sol doing, and you know, how relevant is that?
Well, I mean, we're doing a lot. The tribe, you know, and it also varies from tribe to tribe. You know, there are tribes in Arizona that have literally thousands of acres of land and lots of freeway frontage location to place casinos where they will, you know, prosper. But with the other thousands of acres of land, they can, you know, do all kinds of other economic development. The Pascua Yaqui tribe doesn't have that. Their original reservation was, I think, 270 acres southwest of Tucson, and the lands that they've acquired since then, and they have acquired land, you know, they've added to it, but it's, you know, it's not the kind of, you know, huge land base that might lend itself to all different kinds of economic development. So historically, the tribe has not done a lot of economic development other than, you know, what comes from the casino. But about a year ago, the tribe hired a director of economic development and is really pursuing that, you know, recognizing that the tribal membership numbers are growing, right? And they need to have other businesses, enterprises that they can look to diversify the revenue stream. And so I was really happy that they decided to do that, because it's certainly, you know, certainly needed. From our standpoint, you know, we look at additional projects through that gaming lens. You know, what can we propose to build or add as far as services go that would enhance the gaming revenue number? And so we've built a hotel and a golf course, and we have another expansion project scheduled to actually break ground next month, adding another hotel and an RV park and a separate event center to, you know, add options to the casino amenities. And again, hopefully get those individuals inside this building so that while they're enjoying their stay at the RV park or the new hotel, they can also enjoy some of our machines and table games. So we kind of approach it in both of those ways. The tribe looks at some of the non-gaming opportunities to diversify, and then we look at opportunities that might enhance what we're already doing.
That's great. Did you have another question?
Well, Steve kind of touched on it, but, you know, was there any one project or event that you worked on that you were particularly proud of, and why? So, that, you know, I've heard, you know, other stories on other nights where it was, you know, a particular, you know, New Year's Eve promotion, but is there any, you know, one event or one project that you worked on in particular that you were really proud of?
You know, one thing that I've had the opportunity to do since Steve left is, and this is another one of those areas that I would say I learned from him, as opposed to the other way around, is I've spent a lot more time on entertainment, and I have a great respect for how complicated it is. So I think in recent history that stands out. Because it, you know, from the outsider, it kind of looks simple, you know, sign the contract and they come and play and they entertain your guests. And it's just, there's so much more to it than that. So I have a newfound respect for all the work that he put into that. And not to mention all the other work that he did. That's just, you know, that's one tiny part of it.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
You have a good night. It's great. All right. We'll move on here. Hello, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Kim?
Yes. Hey, Kim. How's it going? Sound good.
Great.
You know, I've got a niece who's just about to start law school in the fall. And she's got aspirations of, you know, being in the gaming business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just kind of like a spark in her eye. But, you know, going into the legal side, do you have any kind of insight or guidance of what she should focus on, you know, with that kind of, oh, like a long-term goal, you
mm-hmm.
know, being in the gaming side, you know, in an upper management position?
I do. What did you say your name was?
Pete,
I have a few comments for her, and if she wants, I'd be happy to talk to her at some point in the next few weeks and share whatever insights I can. But so one thing that I think is interesting is, as a lawyer, it's fairly easy to go back and forth between commercial and Indian, unlike
mm-hmm.
in operations, and so that's a flexibility. I think that's a real plus. You know, you could be a lawyer for a tribe in California, and then you might be in-house counsel for a company in Las Vegas, and there's not this stigma of, well, you know, if you've worked in Indian gaming, we're not going to hire you, you know, at our commercial casino. So I think that's a plus, because it's, you know, then that opens practically every state in the union to you for some kind of, you know, legal job in gaming. My recommendation would be to focus on the commercial aspects of law school. Now, in law school, the first year they pick all your classes for you, but you know, you can take the contracts and the arbitration and things like that, and kind of have a background when you graduate that would put you in a good position to work in a legal office, either for a tribe or a commercial organization. I would probably mm-hmm. I would definitely take gaming law. Obviously, not all law schools offer it. And certainly if there was an Indian gaming course, I would take that, because it would, you know, I don't think for most tribal attorney jobs, many people have backgrounds in Indian gaming, and I don't see that as necessary. I think a good background in contracts and negotiations and that kind of thing is probably going to end up helping you out a lot. But I think having that class under your belt, or at least kind of maybe reading a few books if your law school doesn't offer it, would be a good thing to have. But there are so much opportunity in gaming for attorneys right now. I would, you know, I think that's a really, it sounds like she's thought it through, and she's pretty smart to have come upon it, but there definitely are a lot of opportunities.
It's great.
All right. Great.
Do you have any other questions?
I can't wait to send her the link.
That's great.
Hear what you had to say. Yeah. Firsthand.
Great.
Oh, excellent. Thanks, Jim.
Did you have any more questions?
You're so welcome.
Did you have any more questions?
No, all set. Thanks so much.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. That's excellent. All right. Well, that was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed chatting with you on the show. You're an amazing woman. You've done amazing things.
You're too kind. Thank you, Tino, for having me
on.
I really
appreciate
it.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people are going to have a lot of takeaways from this show. It's very well done. And I really appreciate you being on it.
Well, you're so welcome, and I hope to talk to you very soon.
And happy summer solstice.
Yes.
It's coming up.
All right.
Take care, Kim.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that was fantastic. She's a pretty amazing person, and the accomplishments and everything that she's done, and the advice. It's just a great interview. So July 12th, we have John Dinius on the show, who's the GM of Sequan Casino. And he's a very interesting guy. They're going through a lot of development now. That whole area is exploding, and it's going to be good to hear what he has to say. John Dinius, July 12th, and we're going to take a break for the July 4th week. And so remember, there's always someone with a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. You have a good night. Bye-bye.